Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is a show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. And joining me today on this episode is Juliana. Say hello.
Hello, everyone.
Now, you didn't read this book.
No.
But when we were talking about it, we realized, hey, this is actually a good conversation that we're having about some of the later themes. Well, not the later themes, but some of the things which I want to talk about in a bit. But otherwise, let's...
What's the book?
The book is The Anansi Boys by Neil Gaiman. And actually, someone posted in the Goodreads.com SFBRP listener group. It says, with the start of the podcast, it might be pretty difficult, but a suggestion nevertheless. Give an executive summary in the start containing basic information, like name. The name is... Anansi Boys. It's American Gods book number 2, though to be honest, not sure why it's called that. It seems to be, in a way, it's sort of like playing with some of the same themes as American Gods, but then just going, well, it's not really in the same world as that or anything like that, but if I call it the follow-up book to American Gods, because American Gods was such a success, Anansi Boys the follow-up book to that, it's like, yeah, and then lots of people will give it more meaning or more weight, or, you know, more people will want to read it.
Who wrote it?
Neil Gaiman. Wrote it.
Okay. Well, I haven't read the first book.
You haven't read the first book. I tried reading the first book twice. Didn't get to it. Okay. This is not a very good executive summary. Size and pages. Let's have a look here. It says 384 pages on the mass market paperback. That's what Goodreads says. I'm not sure why I'm saying all this stuff. You can just find this on Goodreads or Wikipedia. Size, pages. Year published. It was first published in... 2005. And style theme. Well, the theme is like gods used to exist and we used to believe in gods, but now we don't believe in gods, but they kind of still exist and are wandering among us.
So would you say it's more fantasy or science fiction?
Yes, it's fantasy. It's not science fiction at all. What's the other one? It's part of a series universe. As I said before, it says that it's part of the American Gods series or universe. I disagree, because I don't think they're compatible.
Does it have characters who appear?
No characters in common. Although, to be honest, I never did complete American Gods. Twice I tried reading it.
So there could be a character later on that you don't know.
I think maybe Anansi, or maybe some of these characters are mentioned, which I'll get onto in a second, and why. And, what was the last thing? And the rating, I will not be giving this rating up front. You've got to get to the end of the podcast to get to my rating. That's the way it works.
Or you just go to the episode list and then see the rating.
Yeah, you can see all the books there. But I don't like putting the rating in the metadata of the podcast or the... you know, just sort of like up front in the podcast, because I think a rating, lots of bit like Netflix doesn't have ratings anymore. It's just thumbs up and thumbs down. And there's been
discussion. I don't quite like.
What, you like the ratings?
I like the ratings better.
But the point is, ratings only make sense, I think, in a podcast like this or in a ratings like this, when everybody agrees what the ratings means. Like, there's a thing with Uber, when they were saying, oh, 5 stars means you don't have any complaints. Whereas other people were saying, oh, it was pretty good, and there was this and that. Oh, yeah, average 3 stars. And people say, no, because with Uber, if their ratings drop below 4.6 stars, they get fired. So in other words, there's only 2 ratings. It's either, I like this driver, they did the good job, 5 stars, or I want to contribute to getting towards this driver being fired. Anything else is that.
But then that is more the problem on the reception side.
Exactly.
Because for Netflix, if it's thumbs up or down, I sometimes want to say, oh yeah, it's okay.
Don't rate it at all.
But
that's the way it works.
I want to give it feedback. So
it's either positive feedback, negative feedback, or no feedback.
Oh, well.
And as a reviewer, though, I like to be able to do a little bit more, but that only works because within my own rating system, my own rating system is very clear that it's purely subjective, and 5-star books are literally books which I want to read four or five times again. Not just read them again, but I just don't like, there's nothing in them which I would change to make them any better.
Right.
Which even means that 1984, which is probably one of my favourite ever science fiction books, still only gets a 4.9, because there's a part of it where I'd be like, this isn't a good, you know.
But you could give a general, general thumbs up or down?
Well, again, I don't think that works either at the start of... Because this book is one that, like I say, we had a big conversation about it before, because I'm so conflicted.
Yeah.
I'm so conflicted
but
about
so
this book.
But it influences something, but not in a particularly positive way.
It takes me a 35-minute podcast to explain why I'm giving something the rating I'm giving it.
Right.
Because sometimes I'll say, oh, this book is a 2.5 star book, but there's some stuff in it which is 5 star material, and some stuff in it which is 0 star or 1 star material, and it kind of averages out. Also, when we do a podcast together, and we both have both reviewed a book, or we both read a book and we're both reviewing it, we average out our star rating as well, like how much we both enjoy it.
Yes.
So sometimes there's a book which I really don't like, but you're like, oh, you know, 3.5 stars, and I'm like, really 1 star, and it ends up getting 2.5 stars.
But also sometimes I think during the podcast, books get clearer to me, at least, and then I sometimes change my rating from the beginning.
Yeah, so, often I don't know at the start of a podcast if it's going to be a 5-star book or a 1-star book. Well, maybe not that, but sometimes, like, me talking about it really firms up what I think about this. Anyway, let's get into this book. It is Anansi Boys. Now, as we were in a comic bookshop a few days ago, well, not in a comic bookshop, we were in a science fiction and fantasy bookshop, and they have comics there.
Yes.
And I said, oh, check it out here. And there was, what was it? There was The Watchmen and Saga, and there was the, was it Valerian?
Valerian. Veronique.
Yeah, because we saw the trailer for that in front of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Before we went to the movie. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, this is a comic. And then we saw it there as well. So, but yeah, also we saw Sandman, and I was like, look at those 14 volumes there.
Right.
It's quite an epic thing. And I totally understand why people liked American Gods, because they'd all read Sandman, but there's a comic, so you don't really need to take it seriously. But a novel exploring the same ideas is something that kind of feels like it's got more weight, you know, because it's a novel. It's not pictures and things like that. So I understand why people were like, hey, yeah, this is great. Let's do American Gods, because it's like the Sandman, but in novel form. And
to be clear, I also haven't read.
But the idea is that
Sandman.
There are mythical things going on in the world. Mythical beings, gods, other things like that.
Okay.
And they exist in our world.
Like Thor.
Yeah, kind of in Thor, but like they influence our world, but people in our world don't know about them. It's kind of secret god life.
Parallel society.
Yeah, like a parallel society of gods and of demons and other things. And there's different dimensions that you can go into. But generally the idea being as urban fantasy, whatever is it, paranormal worlds going on.
Right.
But there's different ways of doing it this way. Like, you know, in Harry Potter, people don't know that there's, like, normal muggles don't know that there's a whole other world of magic going on.
True.
Even though we're influencing them, they're like, they just don't know about it. And that's what American Gods is like. In some ways, I'm sure there's parts where people do realize other stuff's going on. But
so pretty much it is taking Greek mythology.
Not just Greek. It's all different kinds of mythologies.
Okay. It's mixing up.
There
all
are
kind
some
of
in Sandman. There's all the different things like that. In American Gods, it's all the gods that came from other places, like Thor and Odin, and they came to America, and the people who believe them came to America, and then
of course
those
they come to America. Where else would they go?
Well, that's the thing. American Gods. Well, in Anansi Boys, it's kind of the same idea, but only with what they call the totemic gods. Like, when you've got a totem pole, and on the bottom is a bear, and then there's a big cat, and then there's an eagle on the top. In other words, like, when people were still, before the Bronze Age, and people were, like, having, their religions were based around animals.
Yes.
Like, the spirit of the bear helps me here, the spirit of the eagle, the thing like that. So, those are the only gods mentioned in this. There isn't any Christian gods, or Thor, or Odin, or Greek gods, or anything like that. The only gods are these totemic gods, which still exist in the world.
Like, the gods more like in ancient Egypt, where they had, like,
ancient Egypt, there's, like, a crossover point there, that they still, the gods still have, like, Horus still has is Horus the bird? Whichever ones they are. Like, they still have, there is still a bird god, and a cat god, and a monkey god, but they're becoming more
human.
Yeah, kind of more human. But even in the old animalistic, the totemic gods are kind of part human, or sometimes human, sometimes not human. But, you know, the Greek mythology, Egyptian, the ancient Egyptian, there's a kind of progression through that. And also ancient Egypt lasted 4,000 years or whatever it was. So as it went through, so it started, you know, it started going like, so it's much more like what you would expect, you know, a bit more kind of like the stereotypical Native American kind of thing, like spirit of bear helps me, you know, that kind of stuff. So that's kind of what we have. And Anansi is the spider god, and he has survived all the way through to the modern world, and then he dies. Anyway, that's right at the start of the book.
Okay.
It even says here in the Goodreads.com blurb, God is dead, meet the kids. So his dad Fat Charlie Nancy is one of them.
What a weird name.
Yeah, well, it is explained why he's called Fat Charlie. The idea being that every time his father names something, that name sticks. And other people don't know why they're saying that name. But so he said, hey, when he was like 8 years old or 9 years old, he says, hey, Fat Charlie. He says, we should call you Fat Charlie. And because his father started calling him Fat Charlie, the magic of the world means that everybody who meets him, he says, oh, my name's Charles. And they're like, hey, Charlie, Fat Charlie. And then he's like, no, no, Charles. And they're like, yeah, whatever you say, Fat Charlie. You know, so his name. Even though he's not really fat. Like, he's kind of, it's even explained, he's not really fat. He used to be fat as a kid, but still everyone calls him Fat Charlie. But nobody understands why they're calling him Fat Charlie. So there is a kind of...
So his father bullied him.
Yeah, his father's a dickhead. And but again, his father is a Nancy, and it's kind of explained in the book that a Nancy is very much kind of a low-key mischief-making god.
All right.
So
shouldn't have kids.
And he has two sons. One is called Charlie, and the other one is called Fat Charlie, and the other one's called Spider.
Does he also have a normal name?
Spider. No, Spider is just Spider.
Right.
His name is Spider. And as Fat Charlie's father dies, Anansi dies.
Yeah.
And then he, Mr. Anansi, I can't remember his father's name.
Mr. Anansi.
And so he discovers he has a brother that he didn't even know about. And then his brother turns up and they start having mischief together. And that's pretty much the story. Two sons of a god. Fat Charlie doesn't have any godlike powers. Spider does have some godlike powers. They are both demigods in their own way.
Right.
And it's not all set in America, but he keeps going back and forth to Florida. Like, he was born in Florida.
Is that not America?
Yes, but then a lot of the action takes place in London. So a lot of the characters are London. So yeah, that's the story. Gods walk among us. And there's some interdimensional things and different mystical things. And they get up to different comedy capers of this happens and then that happens and then this happens and then that happens. And, you know, and at the end, the world is saved, etc.
So, meaning that you actually finished this one.
I did finish this book.
And you did listen to it as an audiobook again?
Yeah, and I just want to say, I listened to this as an audiobook. I'm going to quickly have a look at the audiobook details here. Because one thing that let's go through the things I really liked about this book. First of all, before I get onto the audiobook information, is that I really enjoyed the writing of this book. Even, weirdly enough, the writing in American Gods, as I was like sentence by sentence and moment by moment, you're just going, hey, this is really good writing. You know, Neil Gaiman knows how to turn a phrase. It's really good and the conversations are good. I just couldn't stand the whole conceit behind American Gods and the way that the story was going or not going and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But actually, writing-wise, Neil Gaiman, turns out, really good writer. There's loads of really fun conversations, and the jokes are actually funny. So often in science fiction or fantasy books, someone will think they're doing funny stuff, and they think they're writing funny characters and stuff. And you just go, "Yeah, you're trying to do a quirky like Douglas Adams, woo, you know, like you know, a funny thing happens, and he looked at this way, and he did, you know, and
yeah.
Let me actually look at my notes here on my phone because I might have made a note of note of some of these
funniness.
Ones here. Yeah. Nope, I didn't actually make a note of any of the funny... But just believe me, there's some funny stuff going. Which has helped a lot by, and this is the other thing that I really enjoyed about this, by the audiobook narrator, who is Lenny Hendry. Now, Lenny Hendry, I only know him because he's a British comedian and TV presenter. And often when you get someone who isn't like a professional audiobook reader, Audible is like, oh, it's an amazing, this star is, you know, this, you know, A-list Hollywood actor is doing this.
They use it for marketing purposes.
Yeah, it's sort of like, you know this name from this TV show, or you know
right.
that, or like the person, like the worst one that I've ever heard is Will Wheaton. When, you know, there's reasons why I haven't read books or listened to audiobooks because Will Wheaton is the narrator. And I tried, I think it was it Red Shirts or something like that, the book? And it was the pretty much the worst ever audiobook narration that I've heard by like a named professional, like someone who you know. You're like, oh yeah, Will Wheaton, he was in Star Wars, and I guess he's friends with John Scalzi, who wrote the book and
right.
things like that.
Okay,
and he's a big name who draws people in. And then there's other books. I think Ready Player One. I would have read that earlier, except that it was narrated by Will Wheaton. I just like, I can't understand, like, how can anyone... So I was a bit nervous going into this book because it wasn't a professional audiobook narrator. but Lenny Henry. Turns out Lenny Henry is the perfect person for this book because Anansi is the idea being that these African gods, but then some of them went across to the Caribbean as, you know, with the slaves, and then he was living in wherever in the Caribbean, on some island in the Caribbean, and then he went to Florida and then went from Florida and the Caribbean back to London and stuff like that. And Lenny Henry, actually, let's just type it in here. I actually want to look up where he's from. I'm guessing he's from London, but... I typed in Lenny Henry. I'm actually looking for Lenny Henry. Yeah, so he is... Let's quickly have a look here. So he was born in Dudley in the United Kingdom. Where was he from? He's son of Jamaican immigrants. So I was guessing Jamaican and stuff like that. So... When you have someone who is like, you know, this is somebody who has gone to America, like has, you know, Jamaican, well, not Jamaican, but, you know, like Caribbean ancestry and now living in London.
You can hear it in his accent.
He's really good. He can do the London accents perfectly. He can do the Caribbean accents perfectly. There's some Americans who turn up. He can do this because Lenny Henry is a really good, he's an actor, but also he does like impressions. He's very famous for doing lots of impressions and stuff.
Right.
So you get lots of...
By the way, he's Sir Henry.
Oh, Sir Lenworth George Henry, CBE. And stuff like
impressive.
That. So yeah, he's a stand-up comedian, actor, singer, writer, television presenter, known for co-founding the charity Comic Relief, and, you know, does different bits and pieces as well. So, you know, generally, like, you suddenly go, oh, this is actually perfect. And because he has to do comedy in this book, he can do it. Because he has to do all these different things. So it is one of those times where the audiobook, like, just hearing the performance of this stuff, you're just like, wow, this is really great. Again, I'm not sure how great he would be in other... other audiobooks?
Yeah.
Like, would he be good just as a general audiobook narrator? Maybe he is. I didn't actually look.
Maybe then his talents in all those other would just disappear when it's not funny and when...
Well, I don't know.
So
but,
many...
but look at this. Shakespeare. He's done lots of Shakespeare. He introduced to Shakespeare when he made the Radio 4 Lenny and Will, which saw him going in search of the magic of Shakespearean performance. You know, so...
Sweet.
Again, so he also now has, I guess, various different... stage credits, Othello, Comedy of Errors, Fences as well. That's a movie which just won some Oscars, or was nominated for some Oscars. Like the movie version of that thing, you know.
Yeah.
So Educating Rita, you know. So anyway, so this guy, pretty good. Like, that's all I want to say. Like, he's good, and of course I know him just from growing up in the UK, him being on TV all the time. So yeah. Let's do it this way. Let's do the Audible ad now. audibletrial.com/SFBRP. Get this book for free and experience a really good audiobook narration. Good.
Well done.
audibletrial.com/SFBRP. So now let's get on to the thing. The main thing that, while you can see this is like a farce, a caper, you know, and one of the things about a farce, when it comes to a play or a movie or something, it's all about, you know, kind of like the classic one is like there's some people upstairs and some people downstairs. Farces, you always have to have like five doors on stage, and as someone walks through one door, somebody else walks through, and like someone leaves the stage, somebody else comes on, and then someone will be talking, and then they'll turn around and they'll keep talking, they'll turn around, and there'll be somebody else there, you know, like that whole idea is like people coming in and out of the stage and mistaken identity and all that kind of stuff,
right?
And I understand that's what Neil Gaiman is going for here, with the idea being that you introduce gods and magic into this, and suddenly people can use magic to pretend that they're people that they're not, and accomplish things that they wouldn't be able to do normally, and things
like
that.
Okay, so can they just make their face different, make people think they didn't see them?
It's not that they make their face different. It's like when they go into a room, they say, "Hi, my name's Fat Charlie." This is what happens, is Spider pretends he's Fat Charlie.
Oh, okay.
And someone says, so he goes into Fat Charlie's work. Fat Charlie works as an accountant. So he goes into Fat Charlie's work and says, "Hey," and someone says, "Who are you?" He says, "I'm Fat Charlie." They're like, "Oh yeah, you're Fat Charlie." And then carry on talking to him as though he's Fat Charlie. So he doesn't actually change his appearance or what he looks like.
But just by
saying, "Hey, I'm Fat Charlie," everybody says, "Hey, you're Fat Charlie." And
just accepts it.
And just everyone accepts it and okay. just carries on and stuff like that. Which is good fun. And there's some fun stuff at the start. And I was like, hey, this is really good fun. You know, there's different things. He finds out that he's, you know, his father was a god and stuff like that. Again, I don't need to go into too much about that. But the main story really starts kicking off when Fat Charlie's brother turns up, Spider, who he didn't even know he had a brother called Spider, but his brother turns up and his brother is magical, and then they go out to have drinks to celebrate, or not to celebrate, but sort of like as the passing of their father, let's go, you know, go pour one out for dad kind of thing.
All right.
And so they do that and they start picking up girls, and it's sort of like, oh, are they picking up girls? Because then people think that Spider is a movie star, because not because he is a movie star, but because he has the because he's a demigod, he's got the confidence about him, and he just says, hey, waiter, we should have some champagne over here, and champagne turns up and stuff like that. But it soon starts to becoming quite obvious that he's using his mind trickery to get women into bed with him.
Right.
And later on we discover that he kind of just keeps some women around, and he has sex with three of them, and he's got another woman just waiting by for him to have sex with later, and then he doesn't want to have sex with her, so he's like, oh yeah, you can just get in bed with my brother, whatever, like that.
What the hell?
Yeah, exactly. So at that moment I'm like,
So he's basically using women for his own pleasure.
Yeah, but there's a difference. I mean, this is going to sound bad, but I kind of wouldn't have a problem if he was using women for his own pleasure if they were like, hey, yeah, I'm in on this too. You know, like, I don't have a problem with two consenting adults saying, hey, let's use each other for our own pleasure.
Well, of course.
Because I've been there and done that before. You're just like, hey, this is just a sex thing. Right, great. And then it is just having pleasure together, and there's nothing else there at all. And that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you...
Yeah. Well... You kind of already know where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
But then it kind of gets worse. And this is... Then becomes the main thrust of the entire story. Is that... Fat Charlie has a fiancé called... Yeah. Daisy? Here's something I didn't like about the book. There was two main love interests in the book. One was called Daisy and one was called Rosie. And I could never remember which one was... I mean, in context, I knew which one they were talking about. But then there was something... Daisy, like the chapter would start, Daisy did this and she went there. And I was like, and I was suddenly like, oh, which one is it Daisy or Rosie? Like, why pick two names? Mm. Of course, if I was reading the book, one would start with D and one would start with R. And it would be really obvious. It would be, this is R and this is D. But when you hear it, if I'm not paying 100% attention, it was like Daisy and Rosie. And sometimes it took me like a minute of listening to someone. I'm like, oh, this is the other one.
Quite a coincidence as well that...
Maybe. I'm not sure.
Maybe it isn't.
It's one of those things that you can... Neil Gaiman obviously writes all of this stuff on purpose. All these wordplay stuff. So maybe that there's Daisy and Rosie and the names kind of rhyme with each other. Mm-hmm. One of them... Yeah. This is Rosie.
Interchangeable.
So let's just say Rosie. If I've got this the wrong way around, I'm sorry about this. So if this is... So Rosie is the fiancé.
Okay.
Let's just
say
that.
Fat Charlie.
Fat Charlie's fiancé.
Who's the normal accountant
guy. Yeah. So Rosie is there. And she has said right at the very beginning of the book, hey, we're going to get married, but I want to be pure on my wedding day, so no sex before marriage. Going to be a virgin on our wedding night. Our wedding night will be the first time that we ever have sex. And if a book starts with that, you kind of think, oh, like I was thinking at that one point, oh, that's probably not going to be the way it works out.
Yeah.
But the way that it doesn't work out isn't that, you know, Fat Charlie discovers he's a demigod and then uses his powers and whisks his fiance away and they have adventures. And even before they can get married, she's like, oh no, I'm so in love with this person. Let's just have... It's not up to her in this way. What actually happens is that Fat Charlie...
Are these spoilers?
This is a massive spoiler, but I think this is so important to say about this book. Well, no, it's not even a spoiler. Because, again, this is the kind of thing that kicks off the main plot. It happens, you know, part of the way into the book. But the fallout from this is kind of what kicks off the main drama in the book.
Okay.
What happens is that Spider goes around to Rose's apartment, says, hey, I'm Fat Charlie, lets himself in. Rosie thinks that Spider is Fat Charlie by, like, that mind trick that I'm saying before. Aww. He then seduces her and has sex with her in a way which is like, how much was he wanting her, like, how much was it her decision to have sex with this person? Which would be fine, but it's never quite clear that she wants to actually have sex with this person or if he mind controls her.
Obviously she didn't want to have sex.
We know that she didn't want to have sex with Fat Charlie. And so even if Fat Charlie had kind of wooed her to be it, at least you'd be going, well, at least it's someone who is your fiancé that you want to have sex with, but you're just saying you don't want to have sex with because, you know, you want to keep up appearances and, you know, fulfill this thing and, you know, and you don't want to disappoint your mother or you want to get back at your mother or whatever all these kind of things in.
The reasons don't really matter because if she doesn't want it, she doesn't want it.
Yes, but she could... I don't mind it if she changes her mind and actually then has sex with Fat Charlie. But she doesn't. She doesn't want to have sex with Fat Charlie. She wants to be a virgin. And then, by mind trickery, she ends up having sex with somebody and not being a virgin on her wedding night. But not only does she have sex and not only does she have sex, but while wanting to remain a virgin, she has sex with someone who she thinks is her fiancé but isn't her fiancé.
That's worse.
It is so worse.
So terrible.
It is worse. And again, this... could be, again, it's one of those things that, okay, I understand we're doing the farce. We're going for like, oh, you know, I accidentally ended up in bed with the maid or whatever, you know, all these different kind of things. Oh,
like
you
an thought, opera.
Yeah, all these different kind of things. And again, that would be fine if there wasn't the weird mind control stuff in there. Yeah. So if it's sort of like, oh, I thought you were... Or if it was a mistake... Like, I could even understand it if it was like a farce. And the way that farces work is that it kind of has to be innocent in a way. Like, sure, you end up in bed with someone, but you thought it was somebody else, but it turns out both of you didn't know who it was.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Sort of like, oh, I said... You know, the classic one is sort of... I can't remember what the way it is, but sort of like... Oh, okay, I'll pretend to be you, and then you go and do this. And meanwhile, on the other side of the relationship, it's sort of like, oh, I'll pretend to be you. So it's two people who think they're having sex with another, you know.
You know, there's a very, 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 very famous opera by Mozart.
Yeah.
Così fan tutte.
Yeah.
And it's about two couples.
Yeah.
And the guys want to test their women.
Yeah.
And then they switch appearance.
Yeah.
And come back as different people and like say, oh, I'm from whatever.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it's the weird thing about, are you testing something? But by testing it, you're kind of doing it.
Yes, I understand
it's
that.
It's kind of this weird, it's a little bit like the example in The Matrix, you know, when Neo goes into the house of the foreseer and she says, don't worry about what happens now, and he turns around, what? And then something happens.
By testing it, you're influencing it.
Right, exactly. So this is always this weird kind of... But in Mozart, it's kind of not pushing the boundaries too much.
Yeah, but the point is there's a difference between, oh, I'm going to test it, and literally, I want to fuck my brother's fiancé. And this is
the
thing...
That's disgusting.
And this is the thing that kind of annoys me about this, is that the main thrust of his actions is like, and I understand that, and I'll get onto this in a minute, I understand that he's a demigod, but when the main motivation of a farce is, oh, what'll be fun is if I fuck my brother's fiancé, when she wants to stay a virgin and she thinks she's not, it's not like, oh, I'm just going to seduce someone, and it turns out she wasn't very happy in that relationship anyway, and she didn't really want to just be a virgin, she was only, you know, there's different ways that you can approach it, but when it is, I want to fuck my brother's fiancé, and she's going to fuck me thinking she's her, but there's going to be mind control. It just doesn't sit comfortable with me. And then, previously what's happened is Daisy, the other woman, has been mind tricked into going to bed with Fat Charlie, but they didn't have sex. She just woke up naked next to him. But nothing happens there. But then later on, they get together. But I'm just like, but the only reason that they have a connection is because of the mind control thing that Spider was going to fuck her third that night, or fourth. She was going to be the fourth person that Spider fucked that night, but he didn't get around to her, so he just put her into bed with his brother. And then later,
like, he's treating women like puppets, like,
yes,
like,
yeah, like, but he does it with everyone.
But then he can just use.
And
like,
again, there could be a way out of this narratively, which is satisfying, or which didn't make me feel like really dirty, is if after the rape there was some consequences. But what happens is that Rosie slaps Spider once, and So a demigod is slapped on the face once, and that's the only bad thing that happens. Of course, other bad things do happen later on, because there's a whole, oh, we've got to sort the situation out, and they go to different dimensions, and all the other stuff that happens in the plot, yeah. And this person turns evil, and a tiger takes over this, but tiger god influences this person, and this person dies, and, well, you know, there is other consequences. But at the end of the book, it wraps up, after all the raping, happily, everyone lives happily ever after. And so you get Rosie sticking together with Spider at the end of the book. And the moral of the story is that Spider, oh, you raped me earlier on and tricked me and all this kind of stuff, but you get a kiss, oh, and you have to settle down a bit,
so
get
Rosie
yourself a job.
Fiance. Fiance of
And then child. Daisy is like, oh, sure, only this kind. I mean, that was kind of less. But, like, the moral of the story seems to be, hey, Fat Charlie is boring, he's an accountant, and Spider is this amazing rock and roll guy who goes, flies around, transports himself around the world and does all this kind of stuff with his demigod powers and lives life to the fullest. And at the end, it's sort of like, hey, what should actually happen is that, you know, Spider should get a regular job and Fat Charlie should be a bit more rock and roll, you know, so they kind of equal each other out. But both of them are still... Spider is still a bit, it's all a bit rapey, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I understand.
And it's one of those things that it keeps coming back to, sort of like, this was published in 2005. Like, I could kind of understand this, like, when we watch back from these 80s movies, we watch Lethal Weapon. And I think we mentioned this before in one of these podcasts. Lethal Weapon, it's sort of like, one of the main jokes in the middle is that, like, one of the police guys has got a daughter who's, like, 15 or something, and kind of one of the main thrusts of the tension in the middle of the movie is sort of like, hey, don't you rape my daughter? Ha, 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 ha. Like, and it's sort of like, ugh. I mean, it's not that explicit.
Yeah,
so, you
but
know,
it is quite explicit.
It's quite explicit that the 15-year-old daughter is now a sex object for the
when
thing.
When I watched it again,
yeah,
I noticed that and felt like, yeah. Oh, my God, I used to kind of... like this movie, but now I feel like,
yeah. And there's so many. There's even, like, you know, like Young Frankenstein is sort of like this one point where Frankenstein's the monster. Or, yeah. No, not, is it Frankenstein? Young Frankenstein. No, is it? Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm getting it wrong.
I don't know.
But anyway, there's at one point there's a woman and Frankenstein starts raping a woman, but he has a big penis, so it's fine. You know, and you're just going,
wait, what?
Yeah. She's like, no, don't rape me, don't rape me. And he's like, oh, rape her. And no, don't rape me. And then she's like, then he takes his pants off and she's like, ooh, big penis. I guess it's fine. And then rape. Yeah. And it's one of those things you just go, oh, when I watched this when I was like 13 years old, I didn't really pick up on the, like, rape is good if the guy's got a big dick and the woman enjoys it. You know, it's a bit strange, and like movie after movie you watch and just go, wow, movies in the 70s and 80s are a lot more rapey than I remember. Yeah. And unfortunately, you'd think that by 2005, you just go, like, now watching back a movie, like, if you watch back a movie from 2005 or whatever, I'm not sure they are, like, everything is, like, more progressive by then, but you just think, hey, this is a book which people like, you know, this is an author that everyone, like, really holds up, and Nancy Boyce, sure, it's not like top level Neil Gaiman, as far as I know, like with people's favorite books by him. But you just go, I've got like a real, there's a, like at the core, like the core plot of this book revolves around what, you know, like you can only describe as rape, but then they live happily ever after at the end. And it's just,
and they're demigods. So this reminds me a little bit, you know, the tale of, is it Zeus?
That's
being
the thing.
Like a swan, like, and so he disguises himself as a swan and then forces himself onto the woman.
And I understand that this is also what Neil Gaiman is going for with these gods. Like, the gods come into the world and they're fucking here and fucking there. But this is a key difference. Like, we watched Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 the other day.
Yay.
Really enjoyed it.
Very much.
It's actually way better than any sequel has any right to be.
True.
Because normally, when you get to sequels, you want sequels.
At the beginning, Luke was probably laughing constantly for 10 minutes.
Yeah, it was so good.
It was
so good.
Yeah,
the whole opening title sequence, like, it starts off, and I was like, oh, this is a bit weird. They're jumping in. Why is, like, we don't care. Like, there's this monster coming down, and you're like, No, it's just one of those things. A monster comes down, they're like, yeah, we've got to save these batteries from this monster that's going to come and try and destroy this thing. And I'm just like, why should we care about this? We're going to see a whole fight sequence now, because I kind of saw a clip of it from the trailer, so I recognize the state. And like, what's good? Like, we don't care about, why should we now have to sit through a stupid action sequence of them fighting a thing, and then the opening credits starts?
And he was laughing the whole way through. You're not saying anything.
No, I'm not going to say.
You're not going to say anything.
But my big problem, which what I thought was going to be the big problem there, was like, we don't care about this monster. Why should we see this whole fight? It's just the perfect setup to some amazing comedy all the way through the opening credits. It's really good. Anyway,
there we also have gods and demigods.
Yeah, we understand. Well, we already knew that the Star-Lord, Peter Quill, is it Quill?
Yeah, Peter Quill.
Quill.
Yeah.
I always get mixed up by Peter Quill and the Quinjets from the rest of, the other people fly around, the other, I was going to say X-Men, Avengers people, they fly around in Quinjets.
Yes.
What was I saying? Yeah, so here we discover, like, we always knew that Peter Quill, Star-Lord, his father, like,
Know that he was abducted from Earth, so he has a human mother, but we also...
His father, and we find out, but it comes down to the point that he has kind of like a celestial being as a father, let me put it this way.
Yeah, so also a demigod.
He's also kind of a demigod, but it's not really a god, but there's some other stuff going on there. Don't want to give too much away.
Powers.
But at the time you're thinking, his father, Kurt Russell, let's just call him that. Kurt Russell comes in and is like, hey, I'm your dad. It's
Ego.
Like, is it Ego?
Ego.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
His name is Ego, which is quite funny.
Yes, and it makes sense in the movie.
It does.
It's one of those things you go, that's a bit on the nose, but you know what?
Yeah, it's
let's go
funny.
With this. But yeah, he also came to Earth and you're like, oh, fell in love with your mother and I loved her and stuff like this. And I actually understand what's going on there, but there is this whole kind of morality. It's like, well, did she know that you were from space and you were actually a god and stuff like that? But here's the key thing. When you're coming to the different levels of morality, I would kind of be okay in this book, in Anansi Boys, if the person who's doing the raping and stuff, if they were a full god. Because gods come to Earth, like Zeus, and they fuck around and turn themselves into swans or whatever they do, like that kind of stuff. But the point is, demigods, who are the sons, the half-sons or half-daughters, let's say, of the gods, they are never held up to the morality of the gods, because when they are hubristic and they are all these other things, you know, all the negative
also,
things of the gods.
Because they are half-human, they should also know the morality of humans.
And that is what happens with demigods. Demigods are held to the same moral standards of humans.
Yeah.
They are not held. I mean, even if we talk about Jesus, the reason why he came down, he was perfect for humans. God could do anything. God can do anything he wants. I mean, I'm just going like, if we say that God and Jesus were two different things and Jesus was kind of the demigod, like, you know, like he should be. Like if we go back to like what the roots of these myths should be, Jesus on Earth was perfect for humans. But God can do stuff which wouldn't be perfect for humans, but it's okay because he is an absolute power. He is a supreme being.
Yeah.
So if this book had been Anansi fucking around doing that kind of stuff, I'd say, I'd kind of go, okay, it's bad, but it's kind of understandable because a god isn't subject to human morality and ethics and stuff like that. They are not at the same level. So it's the difference between in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Kurt Russell going around and fucking everyone he wants to. It's like, it's bad, and it's actually, you know, this is bad. Like, even in the movie, it turns out, not a good thing. This wasn't a good thing for him to do.
But I'm pretty sure...
But I'm just saying, let me finish up a point, is that if Peter Quill did that, we would all be like, boo, don't do that. Yeah. You know, we want him to be... We want, even if he's got extra powers or different abilities, he can hold on to the purple stone or whatever it was in the first one.
But he doesn't do it.
No, he doesn't. And that's why he's the hero, is that he is kind of, I wouldn't say a demigod, but if we're looking at the same level, it's the good thing is that demigods, if they do something bad, they are regretful and go, even though I have all of this power, I shouldn't use it badly because I should actually, the humanity in me should be the controlling influence.
Right.
And unfortunately, in Anansi Boys, it seems like it's the wrong thing. If it had been tiger or bird or monkey or spider going around fucking people and raping, you'd be like, okay, it's bad, but at least I get it because they're from another world, they're from another realm, they're on a different level, all these other kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But the morality of demigods needs to be the morality of humans, and either they should fail at that and die, or there should be some consequences to it.
Yeah.
Or they should get through it and be rewarded for not fucking up. Or if they do, they should be... You know what I'm trying to say? Like, even... I don't know. Even in the Marvel movies, Loki is like, oops. I mean, there's still a bit of redemption there sometimes. I don't know if it always happens. But at least there's a kind of an admission of guilt or something. And it's not living rapily ever after.
Yeah.
It's just
also, I
weird.
I think also it's a difference because... In the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 movie, Peter's mother, like, I think she just felt like a normal relationship with that guy. She felt loved, and she wanted her son to be good, and like all this kind of stuff. She didn't really know, but...
But she did know, but I think, to be honest, I'm not sure if this is actually in the movie or not, but the reason why Peter Quill is the successful offspring of Ego is because his mother was the one that he fell in love with.
Yeah.
Even though he had done other things elsewhere. I mean, I'm not sure. I'd have to watch the movie. I'm not sure if it's stated explicitly in the movie.
It is.
But it seems to be the reason. So in a way, it was because Peter's mother and the Star-Lord version one, because they were in love, that's what made that special, maybe. So there is a kind of like, oh, power of love and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But again, I'm not, again, is that my reading or not my reading, whatever it is, that's not really a spoiler either. So it's just one of those things that's, you'll understand when you get to that point in the movie, sorry. my point being, well, you know, and understand my point, is that like there are different levels of, I know this is going to sound really weird, but there's kind of different levels of acceptable rape in god mythologies, like of deities and stuff like that.
Just saying that, I mean, I know.
No,
do you
understand what I mean? Like,
stuff,
I'm just saying the stories that we accept, like, oh, that's just gods getting up to no good. Like, you go, oh, what do you expect? They're gods. Of course they're going to go around and not care about this and not care about that, and there's going to be rape and stuff. But I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying it's good actions. I'm just saying there's an acceptability within plot lines and narratives of these ancient myths when gods are getting up to all kinds of no good. You kind of go, yeah, okay, that is no good, and it's bad, and it leads to bad things, but it kind of, like, well, what do you expect? They're gods. They're above us. They're so far above us. Like, we are but ants to them.
Yeah.
Like, so if I tread on an ant, and no human or even ants are going to go, ah, he should be held to account for ant murder. It's like, no, it's a human killing an ant. Or even if an ant, or even if humans do experiments with fruit flies and make them, like, artificially inseminate them, but beyond, you know, outside of their control.
Mice or something.
Yeah, nobody goes, oh, that's, you know, you breeding mice is mice forced rape or whatever, like impregnation. Nobody does that because humans, like, but the point is if a human is half ant, and starts doing that, or half mouse and starts doing that, you're like, no, you're a mouse like us, there's a different set of rules now, you're a demi-mouse or a demi-ant, you understand? Like, there's different levels of what morality you can...
Appoint somebody
a higher being.
Yeah.
If it's ants and humans, or mice and humans, or humans and gods, or humans, or whatever, like that. But demigod is this point where there isn't you can't give them a free pass for their morality.
Right.
They have to be held into account for their morality. And I think Anansi Boys falls so far on the wrong side of that it spoiled my enjoyment of the book. Like, when it went past that point and it started going on, I was just like, oh, there's not going to be any, like, the bad consequences for this is one of those stupid farce consequences. Like, you know, if you'd have just talked about this, you could have worked it all out, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
That's kind of the level of the bad consequences in this book. And it is bad for some people, and some people do die and other things happen. But But that, once they clear up the, oh, we should have just talked about this earlier, oh, we should have just communicated better earlier, or, oh, there's this thing, then the police didn't believe this happened because it's magic. Once they clear up all of that, there's still this core issue of the central rape of the book, which isn't cleared up, and it's just sort of like, and now they all live happily ever after. I'm like, no, that was the central thing. That's the thing. That's not some. That wasn't a side effect. That is the thing in the book, and it's just brushed over. And I was like, as we were going through the book, as I saw this coming, I was like, no, you've got to address this. You can't just, and addressing it doesn't mean, oh, actually, Fat Charlie, I'm not in love with you anymore. I'm in love with I'm in love with your brother who tricked me into having sex with you,
so
but it wasn't
him.
Know. Later on, when she found out, she was just like, well, that was naughty. You shouldn't have done that. But I'm still in love with you, not your brother, and I'm going to marry the person. Yeah, they get married at the end. And it's just one of the things. It's like, this is the central thing of the book. And
Stockholm syndrome, I would call it.
Yeah, it's kind of like Stockholm-y syndrome. You know, it's not quite Beauty and the Beast level of Stockholm syndrome, but, oh, you're getting a phone call. Do you want to take that?
Well.
After that quick intermission for Juliana's phone call, which I'll edit out. So, yeah, that's it. That's my main... Again, all of the great stuff about this book is kind of weighed down by this central part of the story, which is, again, just a bit too rapey.
Also, I'm not a person who likes reading about this kind of stuff. I stopped reading Larry Niven, Ringwald, was it?
Yeah.
Because it just got too, it just got too close to me feeling uncomfortable. I don't want to read something I feel uncomfortable reading.
Yeah, of course.
I just don't. I'm probably.
But again, this was one of those things that everything else about the book was so good that I was kind of. And later on, when I found myself enjoying the book quite a bit, I was like, "Oh, this is good. This is good." And I was like, "Yeah, but it's like if the rapey thing doesn't get resolved in a way which I kind of feel like isn't condoning mind control, imposter rape. You know, if it at the end we get to the end of the book and it doesn't really address that, and so it was one of those things that all the time I was kind of like, this book could be amazing by the end, or it could be like the real massive disappointment. And unfortunately, it came to the disappointment end, despite being really well written, with characters who were interesting and stuff that was happening that was interesting, and the mythology way, way better than anything in American Gods. I mean, because it's more self-consistent. It's not like, oh, and everything here, and television is a god, and Twitter is a god. I'm like, really? Is television a god? No. It's very, you know, like the cosmology was better, the characters were more interesting, just overall, everything that was happening was much better. So if it hadn't had that kind of rape at the heart of the story, I would be like, hey, this could be like a solid 4-star, 4.5-star book. But it isn't.
It isn't.
You know, it's that
and
like...
And it needs to be
major
taken
misstep.
Into account, totally. Yeah. You can't just say, okay, well, there was this bit that I really, 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 really didn't like. And I really think it shouldn't have been that bad. But the other bits were good, so I give it a high rating.
Yeah,
no, I don't
that thing that they didn't like was the core of the story.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It all came back to that. Like, everything in that second, or like 2/3 of the way through and onwards of the book, or halfway through the book and onwards of the book, came back to that one moment and that one action. And it was, there was never any, I mean, there was some acknowledgement, oh, that was a nasty thing to do. But there was,
I just read something very, an interesting article today about some weird sexual assaults going on in music universities in Germany. And some of the really high profile artists and people who'd done really good with music education, all this kind of stuff, who got really, really sexual assaulting towards women. For quite a time, and some people, and these old men, like, all saying, like, oh, this is fine, I can do this. This is fine. Just a kiss and stuff.
Yeah.
But then the author asked the question, is an artist above the law? His art can do things.
Yes.
But he as the person can't. And this is the same thing. If the demigods go to other demigods and do this kind of stuff, fucking around with other demigods, fine, because they are on the same level. They can face each other on the same...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, when, and again, it's sort of like, it's like, what level should they be held accountable to? Like,
on
in
the
Greek,
same level, not underneath.
And that's the thing, even in the Greek myths, is that, like, gods fucking around with each other, it's like, yeah, gods will be gods. Even demigods fucking around with other demigods, you're like, yeah, they'll be demigods. Okay, you forgot to say something. What was that?
So the most important thing about people with power is that you're not using your power to influence your wants, your what you want or need to people with not those powers.
Of course.
So that is basically what I was saying about the artist and and music universities and teachers and stuff like that. So if you have the power to do something to a person who doesn't have the power, you just don't.
Yeah, good point. Was that what you wanted to add
back
in?
That was what I wanted to
say. Well, I also forgot to say a few things. It says in the thing, everyone has heard Anansi stories. And apparently, maybe is Anansi... Have you ever heard Anansi stories? You know what they are? No, me neither. So maybe that wasn't me. And also, one of the characters who is a taxi driver who turns up just for a minute, like in a minute or two in the book, his name is Burridge. And
no,
it's very, yes,
really?
Yeah, very rare that anybody, I ever get That's anyone in fiction funny. Anywhere, like finding out someone who's called Burridge.
Is he a taxi driver in the UK, though?
Yeah, a London taxi driver called Burridge, which is kind of makes sense, because if anyone is called Burridge, they're probably from around that area. But I don't know if my spelling, so if anyone has the book, Anansi Boys, can you check if it's the spelling of Burridge of my name, B-U-R-R-A-G-E, or if it's B-U-R-R-I-D-G-E? Because if it's...
Burridge.
If it's Burridge, I-D-G-E, which is the more common spelling of the name Burridge, it's not me. And if so, and if it is A-G-E at the end, this could be the first ever Burridge I've ever encountered in a fictional work, which could be
Sweet.
Pretty good. Anyway, that's enough. I'll edit that in where it fits. But there is this thing, like, can we separate out something from, like, can we separate the art from the artist? In other words, if the artist has done something bad or had bad political views or voted for the wrong person or like that,
can still be
be there, it can still work out. But the point is, if somebody, like, even somebody who's accused and convicted of rape, you could still say, like, or read a book by someone who's been convicted of rape or sexual assault or whatever and still appreciate the book. But then there's the problem is, like, but what's the book about rape? Because then if the book's about rape, it's sort of like there's a different thing. And I'm not, again, not saying anything about Neil Gaiman's personal life or whatever it is, but he's writing a farce. I think this was just a really misjudged farce, because farces where people end up in bed with the wrong people can be fun and it can be innocent, but there has to be... I don't know, there has to be a core of morality there, which I can identify with as a human being, even if it's a mistake. Like, oh, I accidentally had sex with the wrong person, it was a mistake, and they thought I was this, you know, that kind of thing. There are stories like that. And in the end, you just go, oh, that's all naughty. But there's a line between something being naughty and then something being malicious, premeditated rape.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between a farce, which is accidentally naughty, Or you know, oh, you're doing this. Oh, you're having an affair over here, and you're going to get caught and stuff like
and
that.
In the Mozart operas, it ends with a kiss or something.
Yeah.
I mean, it is obvious that it is not only the kiss, but stage and stuff like. But this is more of the, like...
Yeah, and they find out what's going
kind of
on.
Level, and then they're kind of like, oh, my God. And
yeah. Oh, you shouldn't have just kissed them or whatever. Like that. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Anyway, that's enough, because we talked for 50 minutes about this.
Yeah, I don't want now people us thinking that anything is wrong with Neil Gaiman or
anything.
No,
don't know anything about Neil Gaiman.
No, seems like
a nice guy.
We didn't mean any of that.
I mean, in American Gods, there's a character who is a serial killer, and you get together and meet these people at the serial killer convention, where all the different serial killers from all the way around America come together into this hotel.
What?
Yeah, and someone's hitchhiking, and he gets a lift with someone and ends up staying at the hotel when a serial killer... I mean, it's not as if that you can't do, like, serial killing and genocide and a homicide and suicide and rape. You know, you can, it's okay to use these things in fiction.
Yeah.
But like I say, this just felt a bit misjudged. You know, sometimes there's like a little, even actually with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 that we saw, there was still a bit in the middle where, like, everyone on the spaceship dies. How do they die? They die and it blows up and everyone dies. Okay, everyone on the spaceship dies. That's not what happened. What happened is that we see individually every single person in the ship being killed individually in this kind of premiere. And you're just going, oh, this is heavy. Like, I understand what they're doing, but it felt a little bit misjudged at that time.
Yeah.
But it kind of earned it in some ways, but didn't earn it in other ways.
It was one type of specific type of person doing it to their same type of person.
Yes, and you understood why.
This happening the other way around before as well.
Yeah, these people did something bad, and as a consequence, they all die. We saw them individually killing people beforehand, and now they earned not just blowing up the spaceship and everyone on the spaceship dying. They earned, like, killing them one by one by one, and you're like, okay, this is pretty heavy. This is.
But also, the consequences come from the same level kind of person.
Yes.
So if a demigod does something to a human, and then gets judged and convicted by another demigod about this behavior, I think then it is kind of
it can work out okay.
Yeah.
But in the same way that, like, when the god kills people, it's sort of like, there you have to see it from a distance. Like, like it has to be something blowing up and just going, oh, I guess everyone died there, or some force sweeping past people and going, well, they probably didn't survive. But there is a difference between, oh, I guess everyone died, or, oh, they probably didn't survive, with literally seeing people's, like, breath go out of their body and their hearts bursting or whatever you saw, like, on an individual basis. So,
well, it's not that bad.
No,
you,
it's
you
not.
You describe it really bad. It
no,
is not.
But I'm saying, it's pretty, like, what they did in the first movie, where, like, for example, Groot shoves his arm through all of these things and then shakes them around and goes like that and turns around and goes, hey, and it's played for laughs. And you're like, hey. And also the guy with the whistle, and he goes, whoo. In the first movie, there's all these people pointing guns at him, and he goes, whoo, and he whistles, and it goes, and then it comes back into his hand, and then they all just fall down dead.
Yeah.
You're like, ah, that is cool.
Yeah.
And these are kind
because
of faceless
the, because
baddies.
The other, yeah, they are faceless, and they have the mark on, these are bad.
Yeah, but because of that, it's sort of like to go, oh, okay, those are played for, oh, that was a cool way to kill lots of people. And also, hey, Groot is actually really funny and innocent, and that's really funny.
Yeah.
Whereas in this movie, like in Volume 2, there's that sequence where everyone dies, and you're just like, oh, these people, oh, you know, it's
fucking
like
right.
I say, but the point is, the movie makers are good enough to know what they're doing with that scene. And there's all this, like, light, you know, awesome mixed music playing in the background. And they're like, la, 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 la. And it's like, ooh, I can see, this is right on the edge of what I would feel acceptable. And maybe some people would find that unacceptable.
But this is coming down to this thing again.
It's like gauging what is good.
Yeah, and what is okay for you to accept in fiction.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It is fiction, and we know it is fantasy.
Yeah, nobody was actually killed. No, nobody was
exactly.
actually raped.
But still, as a human, which we all are, we are not demigods or gods, so we feel closer to the humans and then feel it more of like a... I feel more of a, like, attachment to a human that gets... weirdly assaulted by a god disguising himself.
No, demigod.
No, demigod.
Demigod. And that's the big difference. But I know it's probably for other people, but for me, in fiction, god's doing stuff, you're just like, whatever. Demigod's doing something like, you're half human. Remember that half human part.
Yeah.
Okay, friends on Goodreads, 101 rating, a 3.62 average, which is lower than I was expecting, to be honest. Julie Davis rated it 4 stars. And Nancy Boys, this book is like a very good meal at a diner, delicious and enjoyable, but won't change you or change the way that you look
but
at the world.
But that wasn't what Julie Davis said. It was by somebody else.
Oh, yeah, you somebody else said that. I was just going down and reading some other bits and pieces. Lots of people rate it 5 stars. Oh, not many people actually said much about it. I'm going to rate this book 3 stars because it could have been a 4.5 star book, but it has to be knocked down 2 stars for the rest, for the, like, this main central thing.
Making you feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. I guess that's one way to put it. It's more than just making me feel uncomfortable. More like disappointed. I know it's weird to say this,
disappointed.
And I don't want to say rape is only worth 2 stars knocking off a book rating or anything like that. But like I'm saying, within this book, like rape isn't just a 2-star offense. I mean, it's a 5-star offense. But like I say,
no, it's bad.
Yeah. I know, that's probably the wrong way to phrase what I'm saying there. But like I say, this central thing, and again, I can kind of understand what he's going for. And I don't think it was malicious. It's just a misjudgment in a way.
Well, this is really, like, talking about this kind of stuff is really hardcore. Like walking on a really narrow path
and I know that I've probably said stuff that's insensitive here in this episode. But this is what comes with just trying to talk about something like out in the open.
It's really not easy.
It's really not easy. But sometimes you've just got to, like, this was my main thoughts as I was reading this book, that second half of this book. These were my main thoughts. And I was like, got to talk. And then after talking to you about it, I was like, well, let's just discuss this on the podcast.
Yeah.
Because me just talking about this by myself, I wouldn't have someone like, what do you mean by that? Like, because it might be clear to me. And I think two people talking about something,
it
kind of clarifies it a bit, but you get down to what you actually want to talk about.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's finish this up before one hour. audibletrial.com/SFBIP for the audiobook.
Just get yourself your own opinion about it.
Yeah, I would say read it. I mean, like I say.
Or listen to it.
No, going in what's going to happen. I guess it's spoilers, whatever. Yeah, 3 stars. What did I say? Did I say 3 stars?
3 stars.
Follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge on Twitter. Instagram, at Luke Burridge on Instagram. You can also check out us both on goodreads.com. See what we're reading. And also, if you read a book, then I can also see what you have rated it. Look, Brian, 3 stars. Redek Konzwiskowitz, 3 stars. Lots of people have read this book.
Also, lots of people also didn't give it a great
rating. Not,
so
there's quite a few, there's quite a few three stars.
I don't think you're the only person feeling this way.
I don't think anyone could rate it 2 stars. I mean, maybe people have rated, 1 star. Because if you're rating it 1 star, it means there's nothing good about it at all. And like I say, there's so much good in it, but there's also not good in it. And there's loads of good stuff, which I didn't even talk about. But
somebody wrote, put it in their shelf, abandoned. So,
abandoned, yeah. I understand that. Well, American Gods was for me. Right, that's it. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.